Recording in progress.
Whenever you're ready, Madam Chair.
Okay. The Piscataway Township Planning Board meeting will please come to order. In compliance with the Open Public Meetings Act, adequate notice of this meeting was provided in the following ways. Notice published in the Courier News, notice published in the Star Ledger, notice posted on the bulletin board of the municipal building, notice made available through the township clerk, notice made available through the township librarian. We'll now have the open public meeting notice. Mr. Barlow.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. This meeting is being held virtually in conformance with the Department of Community Affairs guidelines on virtual meetings during the COVID pandemic. Appropriate Zoom notice was sent out with all of the notices, and it's appropriate for the meeting to go ahead in the virtual setting, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Mayor Waller. He's here. Councilwoman Cahill.
Here.
Ms. Corcoran.
Here.
Ms. Saunders.
Here.
Reverend Kenny. Reverend was on earlier. Mr. Espinoza?
He was here.
Yep, I'm here.
Hi, Dennis. Mr. Foster is going to be a little late, but he will be here. And Chairperson Smith.
Here. The Pledge of Allegiance. The flag is over my right shoulder. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America. And to the Republic, for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Can we have the swearing in of the professionals?
Yes. Can you please raise your right hand? Do you swear that the testimony about to give will be the truth and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
Thank you.
We do have one change to the agenda tonight. Item number 10, 20PB06, Nathan Yates will be adjourned until September meeting. If anyone is here for that application, it will be heard in September, in our September meeting.
September 1st, Madam Chair, we're a little, meeting's not at its normal time of the month, but September 1st.
September 1st, thank you. We'll have adoption of the minutes of the regular meeting of July 14th, 2021. Ms. Saunders?
Madam Chairman, I'd like to memorialize the minutes from the regular meeting of July 14th, 2021.
5 seconds.
Joining for
Reverend. Reverend Kenny, second.
Oh, Reverend Kenny's here.
Yes. Roll call, please.
Mayor Waller. Councilwoman Cahill?
Yes.
Ms. Corcoran?
Yes.
Ms. Saunders?
Yes.
Reverend Kenny?
Yes.
Mr. Espinoza?
Yes.
And Madam Chair?
Yes. Minor subdivision category, item number 9, 21PB15, Abdul and Shazia Bassett, minor subdivision. Applicant.
I believe Mr. Bassett is on. He just has to unmute and turn his camera on.
Mr. Bassett?
Hello, sir?
Yes, I'm here, sir.
Okay, you may proceed, Mr. Bassett. You may proceed with your request for the board.
Mr. Bassett?
Yes.
Okay, you have to address the board. You're here for a two-lot subdivision, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and this is property that you own?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and do you have an expert with you today?
Yes, Mr. Paul Fletcher Engineering Company.
Okay, and I assume you want to call Mr. Fletcher as a witness?
Yes.
Okay. So, Mr. Fletcher, you're present, correct?
I am.
Okay. You'll need to be sworn in, sir.
Mr. Fletcher, can you, Can you please raise your right hand, Mr. Fletcher?
Yes.
Do you swear that the testimony about to give with the truth and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
Please state and spell your name for the record.
Yes, Paul J. Fletcher, F-L-E-T-C-H-E-R.
Thank you.
Excuse me.
Just before you go, Mr. Fletcher, Mr. Bassett?
Yes.
We're going to swear you in also.
Sure.
Since you may testify. So Ms. Saunders is going to swear you in, okay?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Bassett, please raise your right hand. Do you swear that the testimony about to give will be the truth and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Please state and spell your name for the record.
Abdul Edge Bassett.
Can you provide the spelling? Just to make sure.
A-B-D-U-L H B-A-S-I-T Bassett.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Bassett, you're going to have Mr. Fletcher give testimony?
Yes.
Okay, Mr. Fletcher, why don't you proceed?
Thank you. The subject property.
You have to give us your credentials.
Give us your credentials.
Oh, I apologize, certainly. I'm a licensed professional engineer, licensed professional planner in the state of New Jersey. My credentials are current and have not changed since the last time I was recognized by this board several months ago.
What year did you get your engineering degree, Mr. Fletcher?
I graduated in 1971 from the University of Toronto. I moved to New Jersey in the 80s and have been practicing here since.
Sir, would you just give us an idea of how many times you've testified before a board such as this before?
The last time I checked, there was approximately 50 different boards across New Jersey. But clearly, I've been in front of the Piscataway Board, the Woodbridge Edison Board on a monthly basis, Perth Amboy, South Amboy, Parsippany Chore Hills. I've done a lot of work up there, Westfield, and numerous other boards. I have been accepted as an expert in both engineering and planning at all those boards.
Thank you, sir. You may testify as an expert in this field.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
The subject property is known as lots 4.01, 28, and 29.01 in block 11317. It is a parcel that has a dual frontage. It's got frontage on Hose Lane and also on Morse Avenue Extension. It's essentially a through property. It is also known as 580, 590, and 596 Hose Lane West. Subject is in the R15 single family residential zone. Has a total area of 30,762 square feet. The applicant proposes to consolidate the three lots and then subdivide it into two conforming lots. Each lot would be in excess of the 15,000 square feet. Specifically 15,435 square feet. That would be for the lot facing Morse Avenue Extension, and lot 28.01 would be 15,327 square feet, which would have frontage on the old Hose Lane. The applicant further proposes to construct a single family dwelling on each of the properties, with access to the respective roads that they front on, one to Hose Lane and one to Morse Avenue Extension. The home that fronts on Morse Avenue Extension is the first property south of the State Route 18 highway. Proposed driveway. It's a proposed circular driveway with the entrance, the main entrance coming in on the north side. And that would be approximately 90 feet south or distant from the curb line, the extended curb line of Route 18 would be a full 60 feet from the stop bar at the signalized intersection at State Route 18. We put in a circular drive because we felt it would be safer for the occupants of that dwelling to be able to clearly enter and exit head first and not have to be concerned about backing into Morris Avenue Extension, which is quite a busy road. As I mentioned, the two lots are fully conforming. All bulk standards are being met with regards to the size of the lot, lot area, width, depth. The setbacks for the building are fully conforming with regard to front yard, side yard, rear yard. There are no accessory buildings being proposed, and the coverage by building is less than the allowed. So there are no variances associated with the application. We do have a couple of reports from the board professionals. The most recent report from Piscataway, dated August the 4th, has three comments. It notes, and the applicant is cognizant and understands that both Old Hose Lane and Hose Lane West are under moratorium because of paving done on those roads. One until 7/23, that's Old Hose Lane, and until 11/23 for Hose Lane West. The applicant acknowledges and understands that those roads are under moratorium from any road opening permits. That is a first comment in the Piscataway letter of August the 4th. The second talks about street trees, the location of those and the species, and the applicant will revise the plans to suit those comments. We have no problems with that. And the third comment requests a Middlesex County letter, which I believe we received yesterday or today. It was declared exempt by Middlesex County Planning Board. We will ensure that a copy of that exemption letter is submitted to the board. There is a letter, sorry, a report from Delaware Raritan Engineering. Sorry, Delaware Valley, I guess it is, from Charles Carley.
It's easier. And,
yes. And I have reviewed the report. I have no issues with any of his comments. I concur with his conclusions about stormwater management. And by the way, we are in compliance with the stormwater regulations to provide seepage pits for any new homes. We're also providing sidewalks on both frontages across the full frontage of the properties. We also have a report from CME Associates. There's only one comment that I would take exception to, and that is on on page six, paragraph F, it requests that we we reduce the driveway access to a single curb cut at the south end of the property. I would urge the board not to require us to do that. The reason being, as I mentioned, we're quite a distance from the curb line of State Route 18 and also the stop bar. And the other problem with this particular site is there's quite a difference in vertical grade from the highest to the lowest. It's about a 9-foot vertical difference. So to come in at the low end or the southerly part of the property, while it would be further away from State Route 18, it would come in at the most, at the lowest part of the property. It would be problematic to have a home with a conventional garage. It would probably have to be under It would interfere with the drainage issues on the site. So I would urge the board to allow us to construct the property the way it's been shown on the subdivision plan that's been submitted. I don't see any issues of safety with regards to access to Morris Avenue Extension. It is a signalized intersection. So, you know, when there's a red light, traffic will have stopped. Will allow ingress and egress from the property quite safely. As I mentioned, there's no variances being requested. It's fully conforming subdivision. The applicant acknowledges the moratoriums on both streets. The only other point that I would like to bring out is we do have, and I don't believe the township had a problem, we're showing an easement across the property on Hose Lane, Old Hose Lane, a utility easement that would allow connection to the water, sanitary and gas in Old Hose Lane from the property that has frontage on Morris Avenue. And it's that easement is shown on the north side. We would like to move that easement, to the south side of the property because it's at a lower elevation. It'll be easier to connect to the utilities in Hose Lane. And since there's no, we had originally talked about a driveway through that easement, but since that's been eliminated with the access from Morris Avenue Extension, there's no need to have it on the high side. It's going to be more advantageous from an engineering point of view to have it on the lower side, which would be on the south side of the property. So that's the only change we would propose, with the exception of agreeing to the street tree species and locations. And essentially, that's the applicant's case.
Go ahead, Mr. Barlow.
I was just going to ask Mr. Gottlieb if he wanted to address Mr. Fletcher's comments about the curb cut on 6F.
Yes, Mr. Barlow. You know, my thought was that you eliminate two curb cuts on a busy road and you provide a turnaround on the premises, which would allow the furthest from the intersection as possible. However, I will defer to the engineers, Mr. Carley and Mr. Harari, as far as their thoughts. The other issue that I heard Mr. Fletcher indicate was the easements and I across the one lot for utilities to the second lot. And I just thought that rather than providing any encumbrances on one lot, you get the all the utilities off the street that the lot is fronting on without encumbering a second lot. However, again, I will defer, I defer to Mr. Carley and Mr. Harari.
Do you have any issues with the easement being on either side?
No, actually, after our workshop meeting, I did speak with Joe and I did speak with Henry, and we did not have an issue with the utilities being run through that easement.
Okay. Moving it to the south side from the north side?
Well, that's the first I'm hearing about this tonight, but I don't foresee there being an issue. But again, I agree with Steve that we could defer that to Mr. Carley and Mr. Herrera.
Okay. And the same with the, do you, from a planning perspective, have an issue with the curb cut?
Again, I understand Steve's position. Okay. Engineering did look at this. Henry also looked at this. They didn't have an issue, but again, I'd rather just bring it back to them one more time, just to get their final opinion on that.
Okay, we could always do it as a condition of approval.
Oh, great.
The applicant is required to work with the township engineer and the township professionals with regards to the driveway and the curb cuts. Would that be acceptable, Mr. Fletcher?
Yes, on behalf of the applicant, that is very acceptable. We will work, and we feel comfortable that that we can come to a conclusion that's satisfactory to them.
Okay, so we could always do that as a condition.
Agreeable.
Are there any other questions from the board with reference to this application?
Madam Chair, this is Mayor Waller. I just have a brief question in regards to the easements for the utilities. The only concern that I have is that we've been getting a lot of requests from homeowners to run fences, decks, and sheds over these easements throughout the town. And what we've been doing is putting deed restrictions on that. So there would have to be a deed restriction, Mr. Barlow, in regards to that, for no fence, sheds, or decks or anything on these easements, because if they ever have to get serviced.
No fence, sheds, decks.
Basically any structure.
Any structure, okay. So Mr. Fletcher, if we're going to move the easement, the applicant would agree to a deed restriction in keeping with the mayor's concerns?
Well, I would suggest that the applicant clearly would be agreeable that no sheds, no structures be constructed. But to have a fence cross an easement, most fences are in 8-foot sections that can easily be removed. If it's important, that's not going to be a make or break for the applicant, but to restrict a fence to cross an easement, I think is not necessary, although the deed restriction could say that it's up to the owner to remove if necessary, words to that effect, or if you feel very strong about it, the applicant will comply with the request.
Mr. Barlow, Madam Chair, if I may, a lot of times we do have the restrictions in there, but however, properties do change ownership and the new owners find out that there's these restrictions. And when, say, the DPW's got to go in and do something to the sewer line, then they start coming to demand that the town take care of whatever has to be done out there when it's actually, in essence, the homeowner's responsibility. So we're trying to get out of the situation where several homeowners down the line don't understand the genesis of how this happened. So, Mr. Barlow, I'm going to ask you to work something out, whatever, but I'm the one stuck having to sign these easements out there at length. And I've been around long enough to know to see that several of these properties have changed hand over the last couple of decades. And then the new homeowners come in and say, I don't understand why this restriction is, or, and as Councilwoman Cahill knows, why the town should be picking up the cost of removing my fence when it's clearly on a municipal easement. So I'm just trying to avoid a problem for future departments and leaders that don't have to go through this. That's all.
Understood, Mayor. So I think one of the conditions of approval would be a deed restriction to the satisfaction of the township, so that future homeowners are aware. I think that's a good idea. And we can work with the applicant and the township's concerns to address that, so you don't run into that problem, like you said, 3 homeowners and 8 years down the road.
And as you know, Mr. Barr, a lot of times the new homeowners don't get to read the deed restriction until they're signing on the dotted line.
You're right. Mm-hmm. At closing, what do you mean?
Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
Okay. Does the board have any other questions of Mr. Fletcher?
If I may make one more comment.
Sure.
The proposed easement is actually a private easement. It's not for any utility that would be the responsibility of the township. It's for a private water line, gas line, and a sanitary sewer line. So I don't believe that the township would get involved with any obligation to repair or make good. That's my only comment.
Sure, but I think the mayor's concern is when these properties get sold and there's 2 strangers living there and somebody needs to enforce the easement and they don't like the outcome, they show up at the council meeting.
Understood. Yes.
Okay.
May I?
Yep.
To the mayor's point, why not prevent this entire potential issue and just put the just eliminate the need for the easement and connect the utilities from each street that each lot fronts on?
Yeah, Steve, I don't think there's utilities on Hose Lane on the Morris Avenue extension.
Thank you, Mayor. I did not know that.
Okay. Are there any other issues that we need to clarify before we ask for a motion?
We need to just open to the public, Madam Chair.
You're correct. This matter is now open to the public for any comment. Is there anyone in the public who would like to ask a question of this witness? Ms. Laura, is there anyone there requesting to make comment?
Yes.
Okay. Could you identify?
Hello?
Hello?
Mr. Reeder?
Yes, speaking.
Okay. You have a question, sir?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Please.
Could you state your name and spell your last name?
Donald Reeder, R-E-E-D-E-R.
And your address, sir?
600 Hose Lane West Piscataway.
Okay. Ms. Saunders, can you swear him in since he may be giving testimony? Or I can.
She must have been blocked out.
Sir, can you raise your right hand?
Okay, sure. I'm sorry, I was muted. Can you please raise your right hand?
Yes.
Do you swear that the testimony you're about to give was the truth and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Okay. Please state your name for the record.
Donald Reeder.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Sorry. State your question, please.
Well, I have one concern. I live in the property next door, and when they built the Morris Avenue extension behind me, the grade of the land is about 6 to 8 feet higher than it used to be. And now every time it rains, the back of my property floods. And I'm concerned that if they build two houses next to me, with the amount of land that's being taken up by the physical house itself, there's nowhere for the water to go but into my backyard. And based on the grade of the land that's there now, that's the only place it can seem to go. And I'm just wondering if there's anything being done about that, because I don't see where two houses would be good for that.
Mr. Fletcher, do you want to address that?
Well, I will point out that the all the roof leaders are being directed to underground seepage pits. The runoff from the driveways is being directed to the right-of-ways and to the storm systems. There is a kind of a swale along the rear of this gentleman's property in the Morris Avenue extension right-of-way. It's our intention to maintain that swale such that the water drains to the structure that's to the south of Mr. Reeder's property.
Well, I'm not sure if I quite understand that. What is a swale?
A swale is it's like a gentle ditch
right.
where water runs.
Well, that seems to be part of the problem now because based on the grade of the property, all the water runs there now, and it floods my backyard every time we get a decent heavy rain.
But perhaps there's some obstructions in that area.
Join the meeting.
We'd be happy to meet with the township professionals and rectify any problems that are in that soil.
Okay, is there some way that some kind of drainage should be put in there?
But the board, the township professionals, Mr. Hinderstein and Mr. Herrera, are quite concerned about protecting the adjoining properties of any development. We will have to provide grading plans for their review prior to construction, prior to building permits. And as I mentioned, I'll be happy to meet with them on site. And if there's some other drainage solution that they would like to see happen to protect your property, we'd be happy to do that.
Okay. Well, that's my only real concern.
Thank you, Mr. Reeder.
Thank you.
Okay. Are there any other questions from the public? Ms. Buckley, do you see any other people requesting to address this witness?
No, Chairwoman.
Thank you. All right. This is now closed to the public. Are there any comments from the board, or would you like to propose a motion? Board members? Hello?
Sorry, Dawn. I was hitting unmute and it just was not cooperating. So, Madam Chair, I'll make a motion that we approve this applicant's plan for the subdivision. However, with the stipulations that we've laid out, which include the moratoriums on Old Hose Lane, Hose Lane West, I do believe there may be one on Morris, on the providing that the applicant works with our professionals with the driveway, with the curb cut. And then also, and Mr. Barlow, you can correct me if I'm wrong, to come to an agreement with regard to the deed restriction on the easement.
Correct.
Have I covered all of what we were discussing in terms of conditions of the application?
Yes, and anything else that the applicant agreed to on the record, Councilwoman?
Correct. Anything that was in the reports that the applicant received and that the applicant has agreed to.
Correct. Okay.
So that is my offer.
Thank you. Do I hear a second?
Okay. I'll second that.
Carol Saunders.
Oh. I'm sorry, Carol.
That's okay.
Roll call.
Mayor Waller?
Yes.
Councilwoman Cahill?
Yes.
Ms. Corcoran?
Yes.
Ms. Saunders?
Yes.
Reverend Kenny?
Yes.
Mr. Espinoza?
Yes.
And Madam Chair?
Yes. Thank you. Mr. Fletcher, Mr. Bassett, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, item number...
The eighth matter is adjourned.
Yes, item eight is adjourned.
Number 11
is our next matter, which is site plan Skiles Avenue and Sterling Drive Urban Renewal, known as Powerback. Is there anyone here to present that matter? Mr. Harrison.
Yes, good evening, Madam Chair, members of the board. My name is Bill Harrison from Genova Burns. I'm here on behalf of the applicant. This is an application to allow the facility to accept both long and short-term care patients. When this facility was originally approved by the planning board, a question was asked of a witness as to whether the facility would be accepting short-term care patients. The answer was yes, and the township took the view that that meant that it was not allowed to accept long-term care patients at the time. The planning board, the applicant had in fact received approval for 98 of the 124 approved beds in the facility to be long-term care beds. That number, and we'll present testimony tonight, has increased to all 124 beds, and the facility will remain as a overwhelmingly short-term care facility, but we'll present an explanation as to circumstances where some short-term care patients become long-term care patients for Medicare, Medicaid billing purposes. But We have two witnesses tonight, one a representative of the applicant who will explain what the facility has done in its operations and its parking demands. And we also have the engineer. No site improvements are proposed, but if there are questions the board has concerning the existing facilities on the property, he will be here to answer those questions. I just have a few questions for him. So I'm ready to call my first witness if that's acceptable to the board.
You may proceed.
Okay. I call Wanda Mercado.
I'm here.
Hi, Wanda. Can you please raise your right hand?
Yes.
Do you swear that the testimony about to give you the truth and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Please state and spell your name for the record.
Wanda Mercado.
Okay. And what is your educational background?
Sure. I have a bachelor's in nursing and administration.
And how long have you worked at this facility?
1 year and 8 months.
And what is your current role at the facility?
I am the administrator for the building.
And how long have you worked in the healthcare industry?
A little over 20 years.
Okay. And how long has this facility been in operation?
It will be in operation 4 years in November, this November.
And what services does this facility provide?
We are strictly short-term skilled rehab services.
Okay, and the current operator of the facility is ProMedica, is that correct?
Yes.
When did they take over the operation of the facility from Genesis?
April 1st, 2021.
You were first employed by Genesis and now by ProMedica, is that correct?
That is correct.
And are the services ProMedica provides the same that Genesis PowerBack provided?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Could you explain for the board what is the difference between a long-term care patient and a short-term care patient?
Sure. So a short-term care patient, their main purpose and goal is to just receive skilled nursing services. They have a higher acuity level, and the main goal is to go back home to their baseline. A long-term care patient is more custodial, so they would be coming in and would need 24-hour nursing assistance, typically activities of daily living, bathing, dressing, eating, toileting. So it's the same type of care, but the goals are different. The short-termer would be, the goal would be to go home. The long-termer would be a goal to stay in a facility for 24-hour nursing services.
Okay. Does the facility initially only accept short-term care patients?
Yes.
Okay, and under what circumstance does a short-term care patient become a long-term care patient?
The only time we strictly only accept short-term care rehab patients, a patient that would end up staying with our facility for a typical longer stay would be someone whose disposition might have changed. So someone who comes to the building for a short-term stay for rehab and family realizes that they just are no longer capable of going home, their baseline has changed, or they haven't met their goals. Those individuals would then need long-term care placement. So we would continue to provide their care until we can find proper disposition for them somewhere else. So we would continue to provide that care until we can find placement for them at another long-term care facility.
Okay, so the goal would not be to retain them indefinitely as a long-term care patient,
no.
But place them as soon as safe.
Yeah, we would still provide the care because they're with us, and we would not just kick them back home if they're not appropriate to go home. So we would continue caring for them until we can find placement.
Does the presence of long-term care patients have any impact on the facility's overall operations and ability to treat the short-term care patients?
No, not at all.
And can you explain why not?
Yeah, so technically a long-term care patient typically would require less services. The fact that we provide short-term skilled services, our clinical capabilities are very high. So if we had to provide just long-term care services for, let's say, a handful of patients, it's actually less needs and less services because that individual wouldn't need all the clinical capability that a short-termer would need. So if we can handle a short-term rehab patient, a long-term care patient is much more less complex, clinically complex.
And What has been the effect of COVID-19 on the number of patients at the facility?
Oh, well, unfortunately, we've had a huge decrease in census. I think that's overall, and our census is pretty much running at 40% capacity.
Okay, and do you expect that to improve at any time soon, or is that going to last as long as COVID is with us?
Yes, we're praying that it does improve. We're thinking most likely post-pandemic. It's hurting the facility, obviously, but we're hoping after the pandemic, we can return back to our normal average census.
Okay. And you were working at the facility before COVID, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And when the facility was operating at optimum capacity, what would be the maximum number of staff members that would be present at the site at any one time?
Typically, when we were full or close to being full of census, we would average probably about 120 staff members a day, maybe about 80 or 85 on the day shift. We are running about less than half of that right now.
But there would be at most at any one time, 80 to 85?
Yep, on the day shift at one time.
And during what periods of time would that be?
During the day shift, during normal business hours, probably between 9 and 5.
Mr. Harrison, I don't mean to interrupt, but Ms. Mercado a couple times has said, is it consensus or census?
Census.
Do you just mean the capacity?
Yep.
Okay, so 124 bed capacity.
They are at any time.
Okay.
Yeah, so our average daily census right now is we're running year to date about 55. So that's what I mean when I say census. It's just how many heads in the beds.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
And I assume staffing levels have decreased since your census is lower than it was pre-COVID.
Yes.
If the facility accepts more long-term, if there are more long-term patients at any one time, does that increase or decrease the staffing levels at the facility?
Decrease.
Okay, can you
explain? It would decrease, essentially, if we had more long-term care patients, our staffing ratio would change. We could technically take care of 1 to 30. Right now, it's 1 to 10. And also, there would be less staff in the building. We wouldn't have the need for so many clinicians. We run an average about 5 or 6 clinicians a day because they're all high acuity, short-term patients. We have multiple physician specialists coming in. If there were long-term care, we would not have that need.
And was there any change in staffing when the facility switched over to ProMedica?
No.
At the time of the planning board approval, how many beds did the board permit the facility to have?
I believe it was 98. That was prior to me. And when I got there, it was 108.
Okay, no, I'm not asking about licenses. I'm asking the board's approval for the facility.
124.
Okay, and then when at that time, how many licenses had the then applicant obtained for long-term beds?
At that time, I believe it was 98 initially to start.
Okay, and then when you arrived at the facility, how many beds were licensed as long-term care beds?
108.
Okay, and since you arrived, has that number been increased?
Yes, we licensed additional 16 beds to total our 124 beds.
Okay, and were those changes as a result of an expectation of having more long-term patients, or was it just to simply to make sure all beds were equally licensed for short-term and long-term beds?
Yes, it was just to finalize and ensure that all the beds became officially licensed. It was a slow process.
Okay. And do you know how many parking spaces are around the building?
Yes, there are approximately 112.
Okay. And and did the original approval have a provision for overflow parking?
Yes, on Sterling Village, which is directly behind us. And I think we were approved for about 30 overflow parking spaces.
And was an easement obtained from the township to allow that overflow parking on that parcel?
Yes.
When the facility was operating at optimum capacity, did you at my request go, let me explain to the board, we were in the process of having Menlo Engineering go out and do a parking study, which had been requested by the board's professionals before they could get out. COVID struck, but while pending their going out, I had asked Ms. Mercado to go out and just do a survey during daytime when the staff was at peak to see if there was available parking. And Ms. Mercado, can you tell the board?
Yes. Yep. So I did that. I did it actually two times, and I did it during the peak hours, during weekday hours. I did it usually in the morning after the breakfast time around 10, 11, and then again around our peak time, which is 2 to 3. And at no point did we not have parking spaces left. In fact, we had many, many parking spaces. My office is directly in the front of the building. I have a very large sort of bay window where I could see every single ambulance and parking spot in front of me. And I don't think that I've ever in my year and a half that I've been there, a year and 8 months, looked out that window and not seen a parking space available, even when we were full, pretty much filling to capacity early in the year.
I guess you've indicated that the long-term care patients, if any, would decrease staffing. Would you expect there to be more or less visitors if they're for long-term care patients versus short-term care patients?
There would be far less visitors. I've been in this industry for a long time. I ran long-term care centers prior to the skilled short-term center. And on average, with long-term care patients, visitors typically come in on the evening hours and most of the time on the weekends or holidays. So you would not have the amount of visitors that we have in a strictly rehab center.
Okay, I have no further questions for this witness.
From the board, are there any questions of this witness from the members of the board?
Reverend Kenny.
Go ahead, Reverend Kenny.
Yes, I live on 1 Sterling Drive in the city's senior building, and I visit this facility quite a bit there because members from 1 Sterling Drive are in that facility. And there are times when they don't have room to park, and I know they have permission to use our parking lot, but on the weekends and sometimes during the week, our lot is full also, and our visitors don't have room to visit the people here at 1 Sterling Drive. So that statement that she's made that there's times there's no parking in that particular lot during the week. I've seen it. I live here. I see it every day. So that's my concern. So she's stipulating that she's never seen where there's not a parking spot is incorrect.
May I jump in?
Yes, you may. You may respond to that question, to that concern.
Thank you. So there would be no ability for me to be outside 24 hours a day or 7 days a week for me to see if there's ever a time where we do not have parking. To my knowledge, I have never seen a time in my year and a half that we have not had parking. We've also never had to touch the overflow parking since I've been there. And we do have parking on the side of the building, which is around the corner of the building. Typically no one parks there and typically no one even goes around that bend. So there would be parking on that side. But to this point, I have not, to my knowledge, seen that. And if there was a time or a moment where there was no parking, it could have been for, a half hour, an hour, but typically there is parking, to my knowledge.
Any other questions from members of the board?
Council President, I just had one question. This is Councilwoman Cahill. I don't quite understand. I'm not in your business. So this application is to get approval for long-term care. Is that correct?
Yeah, let me answer. It's to allow long-term care patients to be there. It's not to make it into a long-term care facility. It will remain the people.
This is curiosity because I'm learning. So, but when you say that you have licensed beds for that, mm-hmm. Is that that's already happening? And this is more of a formality to make sure that the facility is following all of the township ordinances. Is that what I understand?
Yes, if I can jump in, Bill. So all of our beds are duly certified. We are already certified for long-term and short-term care patients. We have always been since the building opened. We are licensed for Medicare and Medicaid. There is no facility with licensed beds that would not be licensed for Medicare or Medicaid. Typically Medicaid would be first. All of our beds are licensed. I think what Bill is trying to say initially in the beginning is we were told that we would not be able to house long-term care patients in the building because we were strictly short-term care rehabilitation center. We only accept short-term care patients, but there are instances, as I mentioned earlier, where someone may stay long-term care until we can find placement for them because they were not able to return home. I think the concern initially when the concern came to us was they were concerned that we would not have enough parking if we had long-term care patients. But in explaining, we would actually have more parking if we were more long-term care patients. But we are duly certified and we are able to take long-term and short-term care patients.
Okay. And just so I'm very clear on that, when you say able to take long-term patients, essentially you are still only looking at as long-term because they're not able to rehab during what might be the standard short-term period of time. So you've extended it beyond what would be, let's say, the standard rehabilitation, but the intent of the facility is to essentially eventually place that person in maybe what some of us might call, I don't want to call it a nursing home, but a long-term facility.
Yes, you're absolutely right. That is correct.
Yeah. Okay. I just wanted to be clear so I understood. Okay. Thank you so much.
And Councilwoman Cahill, just to clarify one thing, essentially the prior resolution talked about short-term. So because they want to be able to house long-term, it's in effect a change of use. So they need to come back before the board just to essentially add long-term to short-term so that the resolution, if the board acts favorably, they wouldn't be in violation of the prior resolution. Is that a fair statement, Mr. Harrison?
Yes.
Yeah. So that trigger, they didn't want to be in violation essentially of the prior resolution. So that's why they're back before the board.
All right. I thank you for that clarification. Thank you.
And then just while I have Mr. Kenny, Reverend Kenny, I was unaware that you lived at 1 Sterling. And since that's within the 200-foot radius in this matter, you have to recuse yourself from this application, okay? So when it comes time to vote, you have to recuse yourself, okay?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Harrison, I didn't mean to jump in the middle of your presentation.
That's fine. I don't know if there are other questions from other members of the board.
I'm going to ask the board now. Are there any other questions from the board? Well, I have a question. I'm sort of a little bit concerned about the definition of a long-term and a short-term patient. Is there any goal? If long-term patients can stay a little longer, is there any outside goal of long-term? Is that indefinite or is that within a year's time? Or is there any limitation on what happens when a patient has to stay long-term, the length of time that they stay?
Did we lose Ms. Mercado?
Either one, Mr. Harrison, Ms. Mercado?
I don't know. Let me just see if...
I mean, could a patient come in short-term and then stay indefinitely for as long as the facility was open? Suppose you couldn't find an adequate another facility, since these are Medicaid and Medicare patients.
Yeah, just let me see. She's trying to get back in. Her power went out. Let me suggest, why don't we proceed with my next witness and hope that she can reestablish contact. I'm going to tell her she can just call in. Let me do that so I'm not talking and typing.
Well, I didn't open, we can also open it to the public for the previous witness.
Yeah, except she's not here, so.
Well, she's not finished with testimony, right?
Right. He's trying to get her back on, Madam Chair, and I think what he's proposing is to let Mr. Lane, his engineer, testify while we try and get her back. Is that what you're saying, Mr. Harrison?
Wanda Mercado joined the meeting.
Okay. There she is.
Okay. Madam Chair, you want to ask the question again since
I'm sure. Is there limitation on the long term, the person who transitions from the short term to the long term patient? Is there any limitation on the time that they can stay in the facility? Ms. Mercado, can you hear me?
Wanda, you may be on mute.
Sometimes it takes a minute for them to catch up to the audio.
Okay.
I don't know her phone number, so I don't know which one she is.
It's a 201-362 number.
As I see.
Yeah, it's muted.
Does she have to hit star six to unmute, mm-hmm. Laura?
Yes, star six.
Okay. Hi, Kim.
She's here.
Okay.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
All right. Sorry about that, guys. I lost power with the storm, so I called in real quick.
Sorry.
Okay. Wanda, did you hear the question the chair asked?
I did not hear any. I just jumped in. What was the question?
Yes. I have a question. I want to know if there's any limitation on the time that a long-term patient can stay.
No, we have not had any limitations.
So it could be years?
We've never had that. It typically would never be years. We've, on average, someone might stay for about 30 days, maybe a little longer, as long as it takes to find them placement in another long-term care facility.
But the goal is always to find them another placement?
Always.
Okay.
And has the time been somewhat longer recently just because of the difficulty finding a placement due to COVID-19?
Absolutely. And in fact, we have intentionally held on to a few with the family's permission due to COVID. We felt that it was less riskier to start moving patients during the peak of COVID with the cohorting. All of our rooms are private rooms, and the families preferred not to move them during the COVID crisis into facilities where they would be placed into semi-private rooms. So that was by choice of the family members and ourselves. But the goal in the end would be ultimately to move them to another facility.
And absent COVID, the goal would be to move them as quickly as possible to another facility. Is that correct?
Absolutely correct, yes.
Okay. Any other questions from the board? I'll open it up to the public for Ms. Mercado. Ms. Buckley, are there any members in the public want to ask Ms. Mercado some questions?
No, ma'am.
Okay, close to the public. Mr. Harrison, you may call your next witness.
I call William Lane.
Hi, Mr. Lane. Can you please raise your right hand? Yes. Do you swear that the testimony about to give would you truth or nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Can you please state and spell your name for the record?
William Lane, L-A-N-E, last name.
Thank you.
Can you give the board the benefit of your educational background?
Yeah, I've been with Menlo Engineering for 36 years. I've been a licensed engineer in the state of New Jersey for 24 years. I've testified in front of probably 80, 90 boards throughout the state of New Jersey, many times here in Piscataway. I've worked on this project since 2012, many other jobs throughout Piscataway and all across New Jersey.
Thank you, Mr. Lane. You may testify as a witness.
I'm assuming, okay. Are you familiar with the plans that were approved by the board for the facility?
Yes.
And are you familiar with the variances the planning board granted?
Yes.
Can you describe what those variances were?
Yeah, there was three. One was for the number of beds, where 115 was allowed, and we proposed 124. It's the size of the parking spaces, which 10 by 20 were required. We did 9 by 18s. And the third was we were required to have three loading spaces and we provided two.
And was the site developed consistent with the approved plans?
Yes.
Okay, can you just give the board a quick overview of what's present at the property currently?
Yeah, on the site, pretty much in the center of the property is a three-story, about 87,000 square foot total, 124 bed skilled nursing facility. The site has an entrance off of Skiles Avenue. That's the main entrance. And then there's a circular driveway that goes all the way around the building. Off that drive is the 112 parking spaces. Off to the northern side of the building, as you're coming off of Skiles, is the main entrance, has a drop-off area. There's also an emergency access path that goes back out to, I believe it's Rivercrest Drive, just as for any emergency services. And we have designed a detention basin down along Sterling Drive to help attenuate the flow on this site after we developed it. Also, as noted before, there's an agreement with additional parking where we have next door in the senior housing. And we also provided access paths over to that area. So in case anyone ever did park over there, they can meander up on over to the nursing home.
Do you know approximately how many? There are 112 spaces on site, and you know how many spaces off site are available for use under the easement that was granted?
Yeah, there's approximately 97 spaces for when we got the easement granted.
Okay, so there are roughly 200 spaces total that could be available if the circumstances arose. Is that correct?
Yes.
Could any of the parking spaces be converted for use for electric vehicles?
Yeah, they just have to run the electricity outside and the post for a charging station for electric car.
And would that in any way alter the number of available parking spaces?
No, the spaces would remain the same.
Okay. And could you give the board the current status of the application to the County Planning Board?
We made our application. It's pending. We just need to finalize a stormwater maintenance agreement, and then we'll get our county approval.
Okay, and that's with the applicant to sign currently the stormwater agreement. Okay, I have no further questions for Mr. Lane.
Members of the board, do you have any questions of this witness? Would you open it to the public, Ms. Buckley, to see if anyone has questions of this witness?
I do not see anyone, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Close to the public.
Did Mr. Gottlieb, did you have any comments with regards to your report?
No, I believe they've addressed all my questions.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to comment. Mr. Hinterstein issued a report July 22nd, 2021. Mr. Harrison, you're in possession of that, correct?
Correct.
And of the two items that was listed, they have addressed the Middlesex County Planning Board, and Mr. Harrison submitted the operating licenses, which we are in possession of, indicating, addressing Mr. Hinterstein's concern.
Mr. Harrison, did you hear that?
Yes, we provided the licenses showing the facility is licensed for 124 short and long-term beds.
Okay. I just wanted to put that on the record, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Harrison, do you have any other witnesses?
No.
Okay, you may make your closing statement if you'd like.
The facility is a permitted use as both as a skilled nursing facility. Both long-term and short-term care facilities are permitted by the redevelopment plan. The facility will continue to operate primarily as a short-term care facility, but wants to be able to, if a patient's needs preclude it being discharged while it is still classified, as patients still classified as short-term, want to be able to retain that patient until a safe location can be found to relocate it. It is not intended to become a long-term care facility. However, the staffing needs for long-term care patients are less than those for short-term care patients. So the board granting this approval will not increase the parking demand on the property in any way. And I hope the board will approve the application as submitted.
Thank you. Board members, I'd like to entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, this is Councilwoman Cahill. I'd like to make a motion that we approve this application for this long-term facility piece of the application, and provided that the applicant who has agreed to all of the comments and the reports from the professionals does so with this approval.
Do I have a second?
Madam Chair,
Ms.
It's Dawn Corcoran.
Go ahead, Ms. Corcoran. Oh, you're seconding?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Roll call, please.
Mayor Waller?
Yes.
Councilwoman Cahill?
Yes.
Ms. Corcoran?
Yes.
Ms. Saunders?
Yes.
Mr. Espinoza?
Yes.
And Madam Chair?
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Appreciate your attention to this matter.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Item number 12, 21PB20/21V, Core Development Group, preliminary and final site plan.
Hello, good evening, members of the board and Madam Chair. I'm Dana Hall. I'm here to represent the applicant.
Yes, Ms. Hall, you may proceed.
Thank you. So as I stated, my name is Dana Hall. I'm general counsel for Core Development Group, which is a solar energy developer, and I'm also attorney of record for this application. Our client is Digital Realty, who is purchasing the installation of the proposed solar generation facilities for their property at 365 South Randolphville Road. This is a 27-acre lot zoned as LI5 light industrial. It has office buildings and parking lots. Digital Realty operates a data center on this property. They actually operate 280 data centers in 49 cities across 24 countries. They employ 2,500 employees worldwide, and in New Jersey, they operate data centers on 10 different properties, occupying a total of 1.8 million square feet and employing 104 individuals in the state of New Jersey. Data centers are increasingly having become critical infrastructure, particularly in the days of COVID. As you can see right now, we are using a data center by this meeting. Digital Realty is very concerned about their carbon footprint and has a sustainability objective of reducing emissions as much as they can worldwide. And they sought to maximize the installation on this facility using as much available square footage, both on the roof and in carports, as they could. So the carports here is what we're reviewing with the board tonight. We are seeking relief for variances from the code. There's provision 21-501, which is related to the minimum setbacks, and also 21-1014-4F with regard to the maximum height of a structure supporting solar panels. We're also going to be presenting, I have one witness that I'll be calling shortly, but we'll be presenting testimony also that displays compliance with a prior requirement to install electric vehicle charging stations. I know that was something that was raised in the review letters. So the testimony that I'm going to present today is intended to show you that solar energy is a significant benefit, and these deviations will outweigh the detriments. So to that effect, I would like to call my witness, Mr. Chris Rosati.
Mr. Rosati, you'll be sworn in. Ms. Saunders, would you swear him in, please?
I think you're on mute.
Ms. Saunders? Mr. Barlow, would you swear this witness in?
Sure. Sir, if you could state your name and spell your last name for the record.
Christopher P. Rosati, R-O-S-A-T-I, with FWH Associates, Toms River, New Jersey.
Okay. You raise your right hand. You swear the testimony you'll give before the board will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help you God.
Yes, I do.
Thank you. You're a witness, Ms. Hall.
Thank you. Mr. Rosati, can you please tell the board your level of education?
Yes, I am a licensed professional engineer and professional planner in the state of New Jersey. I have a Bachelor of Science degree from Rutgers University in civil engineering. I graduated in 1994. I have been licensed as a professional engineer in New Jersey since 1999 and as a professional planner since the year 2000. I'm a principal with FWH Associates.
Join the meeting.
I'm the principal with FWH Associates and am responsible for various land use projects throughout the state, including, you know, going from single land, single lot subdivisions on up to multifamily developments, the solar panel projects as we're showing tonight. I have testified before this board previously, I think about a year and a half ago, on another solar project on Hose Lane. And I have testified before various boards throughout the state. And in a past job, I was actually board engineer and assistant township engineer for the township of Millstone in Monmouth County, New Jersey.
Thank you. You may testify as an expert. Proceed.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. So Mr. Rosati, can you please explain to the board why we are seeking the variances and tell the board about our projects?
Sure. I'm going to share the screen. I have several exhibits. I have, let's see, why is it not bringing them up?
While you're trying to get that to work, sir, are these the plans that you're going to be putting up that have already been
I have several. I actually have an aerial photo I'm trying to get, but the first thing I'll do is I'll bring up basically a colored the site plan sheet of what we submitted to the board. Let's see if I can get that bigger. There we go.
So this is
the everyone seeing that on a full screen?
Yes, I can.
Okay.
One more. So, this is A1, sir, since this is a colorized version.
This is actually just a direct sheet of one of the plan sets. We actually did it in color where you see the blue, the array in blue. So this is actually a direct exhibit.
Okay.
Now here we go. And here's an aerial photo. I guess this will be A1. Mr. Barlow, this is an aerial photo. I'll start with this because this gives us a better feel for the property itself. We are in block 5002, lot 1.03. We're in the LI5 light industrial zone district. As stated previously, we're approximately 27 acres in size. That's the overall development. The application that we're talking about right now is for 365 South Randolphville Road. The tract is bounded by Centennial Avenue to the south, Corporate Place to the north and east, and Randolphville Road to the west. Our surrounding uses are office and warehouses within that LI5 zone, and the site contains multiple structures that support the data center use. As part of a previous approval, the site required one EV charging station for every 50 parking stalls. Currently, there are 7 EV charging stations on the site to serve 316 overall parking stalls. So that approval condition has been met. They are on site. Let me see if I'll zoom in on this a little bit. The area, you can't really see them the best on the area, but I'll point them out on exhibit A1. If you see on along Centennial Avenue in the south section, there's a couple spaces you can sort of see in blue. That is, I believe, 4 stalls. There's an additional, that's 3 here. There's 2 along the handicap access parking on the west side of the building. And then over on the northeast corner, there's 2 additional adjacent to the handicap or ADA stalls. So the previous condition has been met, so there's no need for any variance for this approval regarding those EV stations. Here's a color rendering. So I guess this will be A2 of our of our exhibits. This is essentially a colored rendering of the site plan drawing that we submitted. So the applicant is proposing to install both carport and roof-mounted solar panel arrays, with the carport arrays being located adjacent along the intersection of Randolphville Road and Centennial Avenue. The system is slated to provide 1.15 megawatts of electricity to the existing use to help offset the yearly power consumption of the utility. The proposed arrays will meet less than 1% of the yearly load. You can imagine a site that's a data center is very demanding to the electrical utility. So even with the 1.1 megawatts and what we're proposing with the next application, we're kind of just scratching the surface with what we need. We have 0.12 megawatts will be supplied by the carport arrays, with the balance of that 1.15 being supplied by the roof mount. We maximize the roof mount as much as we can. It's more cost effective for us. And actually, if we had just roof mounts, we wouldn't be before this board, because we would simply be going to the building department for permits. So we try our best to maximize what we can do on the building. And then where we need to, we propose the solar arrays for the carports. The modules themselves, the individual panels, are roughly 6.5 feet by 3.5 feet in size, and they're wired together in what we call strings. And then they're tied to inverters under the array on the steel frame. What the inverters do is change the direct current flow to alternating current flow, or AC current, which is what you and I have in our homes. So once it hits the inverter, it's just standard AC electric, and it's and the applicable codes are the NEC codes that would apply to either residential or any sort of commercial development. From the inverter, the electrical feeds run via buried conduit to a equipment pad on the easterly side of the building. And once it hits there, then there's a tie-in point where it ties in with the general electrical room of the building. Again, being at the AC current, being that we're under AC current, once it hits that point, we're under standard NEC codes, and we will be constructed in accordance with all applicable codes. And additionally, all safety measures and signage will be in accordance with the applicable codes. The carport arrays themselves will be built on steel frames mounted to steel columns, and those columns will be mounted to concrete footings with a height of approximately 3 feet above grade, and to a depth to be determined with structural calculations. They will be placed at the head of the parking stalls, so only a certain half radius of each column footing will be in those parking stalls, so there will be no loss of parking spaces. The minimum clear height of the carport will be 13 feet 6 inches at the lowest structural member, as required by local emergency services, with the highest point being approximately 22 feet above grade. So we have to hit the lowest clearance per emergency services for life safety issues, and the arrays themselves are tilted toward the sun, so we get the most sun capture. So that's why you have the differences in heights. The array structure will be a cantilevered setup, with the support column again being placed at the head of the parking stall. The applicant is requesting variances for the height of the arrays and the front yard setback of the two arrays as well. All the panels are fixed in place. Their parking lot lighting will be under the canopies, and it's provided by ceiling-mounted LED fixtures firing directly down to the lot surface. Canopy lighting will be tied to the remainder of the site lighting for the entire facility, and will be the run times and will be controlled by facilities management. Detailed structural drawings and calculations will be part of the building permit package should the board act favorably. And there will be no additional impervious surface with the implementation of the proposed solar system. Therefore, stormwater management facilities are not required. Typical issues that we discuss with solar facilities are weather issues. The panels themselves it's not one long sheet. They're individually mounted, and there's some space between each panel. So it's not a watertight situation under the canopy. So rainwater actually drips down between each panel, so it doesn't flow at a concentrated manner at the end of the array. The same with snow melt. Snow melt typically happens on a panel by panel basis. And the other issue is that the panels themselves are typically 20 degrees warmer than ambient temperature. So the snow melt happens a little bit quicker on the array than it does on surrounding surfaces. Useful life, we talk about these panels, is 25 years minimum. And it's typically longer, especially the more we get technology enhancements. And the panels get manufactured to a tighter standard. So we say 25, but it's typically 30 years or longer. The reflectivity of these arrays is very low. They're an absorptive material. We're trying to capture as much sunlight as possible. So any reflection is a loss that we would call from getting electrical generation from these panels. As far as sound levels, the sound level from the switch gear that's going to be mounted on the frame and the structure itself is analogous to a window air conditioner. At any appreciable distance, you won't be able to hear it. And noise, therefore, noise emissions at all times will be compliant with applicable noise standards at the property lines. As far as once the facility is up and running, as far as visits by maintenance personnel, typically it's on the order of once a quarter. There is a telemetry system for the array. What that does is it lets the operator know down to a panel basis on the functionality of the system. So they will know down to the, if one panel is malfunctioning, they will know that via telemetry. And if needed, a repair crew will be dispatched to render that panel operable. As we stated, we need two variances for this application. One per section 21501 requires a minimum front setback for an accessory structure to be 100 feet in the LI5 zone. At its closest, array A is 30.35 feet. If you can see the hand waving in the on the exhibit, it's 30.35 feet to the Centennial Ave right of way, and becomes compliant as we get further south on that array A. So once we hit about, I guess, three quarters of the way down, array A becomes compliant with respect to its setback from the right of way. Array B has front yard setbacks of 88.96 feet and 89 to 89.48 feet along the Centennial Avenue right of way. We also need a variance from section 21-1014.4F. That states that the maximum height for structure supporting solar panels is 10 feet. The maximum height proposed is 22 feet, again, based on that tilt of the array and the requirement of the 13'6" minimum for emergency services. It's my opinion that the board has the authority to grant the variances under the C2 criteria. We're specifically talking about 365 Randolphville Road in Piscataway Township, Middlesex County. The applicant is proposing to install green energy where it can fit on site to offset the yearly electrical demand from the grid. Solar installations are listed under purpose N of the municipal land use law and are also noted as being inherently beneficial in the definitions. In reviewing the 2020 master plan reexamination, it was noted that in 2011, Piscataway adopted the solar systems ordinance to encourage and regulate solar energy projects. It goes on to state that such systems should, quote, continue to be encouraged. Regarding the height variance, it is in the supplied reports that emergency services required that minimum clearance of 13'6" for life safety. And again, with the required tilt of the arrays, the high point is 22 feet. As we were providing the increased height for both safety and circulation, in my opinion, purpose A, general welfare would be advanced. The increased height also allows for the efficient use of land, which advances purpose M of the land use law. This permits installation of solar arrays in areas already developed and paved portions of the site and preserves the berms and green space along the periphery of adjoining roads. From a practical perspective, there is nowhere on site to install compliant ground mount arrays, so the carport is a good alternative to support renewable energy and has the added benefit of providing covered parking, shading vehicles during the hot months. For the front yard setback, it is my opinion that purpose A of the land use law will be advanced with the granting of the variance, as the reduction of the required setback allows for, the installation of carports and the use of solar to help offset the power demands of the site. Regarding the intent and purpose of the ordinance, I would argue the height limitation in the ordinance was put in place without the thought of carports, which have recently have become standard support structures in office parks and industrial facilities where there isn't sufficient roof or ground space to support a system of adequate size. Again, we did our best to get as much on this roof as possible. So to get every last bit, we feel the best thing to do with these would be these carports in the area we're showing. For the front yard setback, it is my opinion, setbacks are put in place to regulate light, air, and open space. That would be purpose C of the land use law, and to provide adequate separation between uses. Here, given the limited nature of the intrusion and that the array itself is an open structure, partially shielded by the berming and the landscaping on the corner, it's my opinion that intent is met and not substantially impaired. For the negative criteria, we look to the effect the granting of the variance will have on the surrounding properties and whether the granting of that variance will cause such damage to the character of the neighborhood as to constitute a substantial detriment. The existing character of the surrounding area, as we saw on the aerial, let's zoom out a little bit. It is definitely a mix of uses that you would say would fit in with a light industrial type zone. The existing berm and landscaping that are installed will provide screening, and as the landscaping matures even further, it will continue to screen the arrays in the future. It's an entirely non-residential area, and given the mass of the surrounding buildings and the one on the site itself, the carports will not have a substantial impact visually. Also, as previously noted, the structures are an open frame, not a walled building, so that tends to limit their impact as well. The front setback variance is only for a localized section of the overall project frontage, as you can see from Exhibit A1. And again, the open nature of the structure will reduce the visual impact. So therefore, it's my opinion the granting of the variances will not constitute a substantial detriment, and the positives of the application outweigh the negatives. We had several review letters from your professionals. I believe I touched on a lot of the issues, but if we want to go to your planner's review letter of July 22nd, I can go to page 6, item 7, planning comments. Item 7A, I believe I handled that. 7B, there is a small area on the site that is called out on the firm map. So you can see where the hand is, there's that shaded like tan area. There's a small little stream that actually is piped almost the rest of the way on South Randolphville Road, that it exits out a culvert and then about 100 feet away, it goes back underground. So there's an area there that's mapped on the flood zone as a flood area. We will be outside of that with any sort of structure or any sort of column. We will be within any sort of improved area or curbed and sidewalked area in that part of the site. So in my view, we will have no impact on that small little mapped flood zone area. The next item C has to do with the existing loading and truck parking on the south side. In the area of the array, there's actually no parking. I will go to the aerial photo that shows that a little bit better, and I'll zoom in. The part of the building where we're proposing the array, there's no, it may look like a driveway in this area, but it's a driveway for small trucks, but there's no overhead door. the overhead doors are off this entrance and exit at Centennial Avenue, where there's a gated entrance and exit. So that's where tractor trailers and larger trucks will be going onto the site. So there'll be no issue with the arrays getting in the way. The other thing as far as a travel aisle, the high side of the array will be along that that travel way. So at the 22 foot height, there will be no infringement on any sort of tractor trailer traffic, should they even use that area. We agree that should the board act favorably, there's some things we need to do on the plan as far as calling out exactly where the support columns would be. As far as the impact of the support columns on underground utilities, before we started the design, we actually had a geotechnical engineer out there, and we did a ground penetrating radar to make sure that this array would not be in the way of any subgrade utility. The last thing we want to do is hit any sort of underground utility, especially something like a fiber optic line or something like that. The gas and everything, we usually get a pretty good mark out, and we usually know where they are fairly easily. It's the other things that go in a site over the years where we use the ground penetrating radar to really get a good picture of what's underground so we don't hit anything when we put the foundations in. We already addressed on the EV stalls for the charging stations. All the other comments are general in nature, and we agreed to meet them. Switching to the landscape architect's review letter of July 23rd. We are pretty much in agreement with everything. Basically, what they're asking us to do is put a little bit more detail on the plans as far as landscaping. Anything that's going to be remain, we will show to be so, and anything to be removed will be so. And if there's anything removed, we will either move it or replace it in kind, proximate to the arrays that we will be hopefully installing. The other issues have to do with details that we will have. We have no issue with changing, and any dead or missing landscaping from the original approval, we're okay with doing that. There are some plants throughout the site that look like they're in a little in a bad way, and if they're in the area of where we're proposing the work, we agree to change them out and put new plants in. As far as the chain link fence around the enclosure, we agreed black vinyl, including the post rails, et cetera. And we also have an approval letter from the, DPW, and also from the emergency services. Again, the emergency services specifically notes that the proposed height of 13 feet, 6 inches. Last letter we received was the Wednesday, August 11th letter from Delaware Raritan Engineering. Generic in nature, we agree that we can meet the intent of Mr. Carley's letter. Some of it has to do with some details, issues pertaining to pre-construction meetings, outside agencies, and we agree to supply the board with whatever is needed should the board act favorably in compliance. No further testimony for me. I'm obviously open to questions.
Thank you.
We'll stop sharing at this point.
Members of the board, do you have any questions of this witness?
Madam Chair, Dawn Corcoran, if I may.
Yes, you may.
Mr. Azadi, there was one additional comment that had been omitted from the staff report. It was recently brought to the attention of the township that several of the trees along Centennial Avenue have been cut, most likely due to the overhead wires, and maybe even some have been removed. So just one additional condition of the approval, should it be granted, would be that the applicant work with the township landscape architect to either replace those trees, perhaps setting them back in anticipation of, you know, maybe sidewalk being installed in the future, or at the applicant's cost, removing those trees entirely. But again, that would be just something that you could work out with a township landscape architect.
Okay. Do we know, was that what the, when utility came through to do line maintenance or something like that?
It may very well have been.
Okay.
So again, we just don't want either, you know, we don't want to ask you to replace and put in the same location, knowing that sidewalk will be eventually installed. So we just want to take a look at that. You know, if in fact we can move them back, that would be great. Or if we have to, if you have to take them out entirely, then so be.
Okay,
great. Thank you.
Any other concerns by the board want to talk to Mr. Rosati about?
Madam Chair, Councilwoman Cahill, Mr. Rosati, just a quick question. I think your aerial photo may have answered my question, but and this in no way is meant to disparage the, you know, the carports, but that other piece of roofing, I guess it's too low or not, you know, a good location for additional solar panels?
Yeah, I'm not sure the specific reason as to why that's not a candidate for the panels. It may be what's underneath in the building. But again, if it was, they would be there because it is a lot more expensive to do the carports versus right. just mounting them on the roof. So we, you know, the engineers, the electrical engineers, the mechanicals, the HVAC, the MEPs, they all look at this to see what we can do and what can fit where. And right. in some spots, it's just not feasible for various reasons.
Okay, no, I understand. I thank you. That was really my main question.
Okay. Ms. Cahill, I might be able to speak to that. My understanding is that the aerial photo may not currently show or be visible that there is actually some cooling equipment on that and obstructions related to HVAC that are on that portion of the roof.
Oh, so that they would need like all of the that to be accessible without fussing
right.
with.
There needs to be minimum clearance to access that equipment and obviously right. can't construct on top of it. So, yeah.
Okay, gotcha. All right, thank you.
Sure.
Do any other members of the board have any other questions? Ms. Buckley, would you see if there are any questions from the public, please?
Don't see anyone, Madam Chair.
Okay, I'm closed to the public at this time. How does the board feel about this application? Would someone like to make a motion? Unless you have other questions.
Madam Chair, Reverend Kenny, I make a motion that we accept this application pending the tree setbacks, if there has to be, concurring with Mr. Hinterstein and the applicant, and any other issues in regards to the applicant, that the applicant comply with it.
I will second that, Madam Chair. This is Councilwoman Cahill. Anytime we can put solar up is a good thing.
Yes, it is.
Thank you. Ms. Buckley, would you call the roll, please?
Mayor Waller?
Yes.
Councilwoman Cahill?
Yes.
Ms. Corcoran?
Yes.
Ms. Saunders?
She's muted.
No, she's not muted.
No?
She no. has twice. Carol?
Maybe she needs to hit star six.
She's not muted, Gab. Oh, to everyone, she's saying yes. Okay. I'm not muted.
All right.
It's just not working. She chatted. She said yes. Okay. So make sure she's okay. Reverend Kenny?
Yes.
Mr. Espinoza?
Yes.
And Madam Chair?
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your time. And we'll see you okay. in 2 minutes.
Yeah, we'll have to do another one, right?
Yes.
We do.
Okay. Item number 13, PB 21 PB 2021 V, Core Development Group.
Yes, good evening, Dana Hall for the applicant Core Development Group. So this building is at 3 Corporate Place.
Okay.
It is actually, yes. Excellent.
Yeah, okay, I got it.
Thank you.
For the record, 3 Corporate Place, not the other one.
Carol Fonda.
Correct.
Join yes. The meeting.
There are two, we do have two applications, and so this correct. Is item number 13 with a different application number on mm-hmm. your agenda. So this, similarly, same block, 5002, lot 1.03, also zoned light industrial. And I'll just go ahead and call Mr. Rosati again to address the review letters and any items related to the variance. So can you call Mr. Rosati, please?
Yes, I'd like to swear him in just for clarification on the record, please.
Okay. Can you please raise your right hand? Do you swear that the testimony about to give will be the truth and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Please state your name for the record.
Christopher P. Rosati, R-O-S-A-T-I, with FWH Associates, Toms River, New Jersey.
Thank you.
Thank you. And if it meets with the board's pleasure, I would like to accept his credentials as previously from the prior yeah, application.
That's okay with the board. Thank you very much. He's still accepted as an expert.
Thank you. Okay, so Mr. Rosati, can you please take us through this application and the
sure. I'll share screen again. I have a let's see, here we go. Let's see, that's not gonna do it. 3 Corporate. I'd like to bring up my here we go. 3 Corporate aerial. Similar photo than you just saw, just a different area outline. Everyone can see the screen, yes?
Yes.
Okay.
So this is A1, Mr. Rosati.
This would be A1 against an aerial photo for 3 Corporate Place. Same situation as far as the site. We are the same actually lot and block. We're still in the LI5 zone, still the 27.5 acre site. Again, the site is houses the office and warehouses uses all around it. We are proposing, I will go to the rendering of what we're doing for 3 Corporate. This is slightly different in that we have one array that is actually going to be spanning both parking stalls and the access aisle in the north parking area of 3 Corporate Place. That in itself brings in two variances, one for front yard setback, one for the fact that it is covering the access aisle. And then we also have the height variance as we discussed previously with the other application. Same situation where the size of the modules, how they're mounted to the array A, which is the one that spans both parking areas and the access aisle is going to be a little bit different. It's not a cantilevered structure. It will be a structure that's supported on either edge of the parking area and will tilt towards the building. So the high side will be along Corporate Place. Same situation as far as the steel frames being on foundations. The difference here is the conduit runs will be again subgrade, but they will interconnect within the building, not to to some concrete pads on the outside on the building. Same issues. I don't want to have to rehash everything over. It's the same issues as far as frequency of visits, the useful life, the weather issues that we encounter. The big difference here is the relief testimony is a little bit different, again, due to that a bulk array, we'll call array A, to the north. Again, we need a variance for section 21-501 for the minimum front setback for an accessory structure where 100 feet is required in the LA5 zone. At its closest, array A is approximately 29 feet from Corporate Place, and at its farthest is 64.5 feet from the right of way. Section 21-10.14.4F again states that the maximum height of the structure of supporting solar panels is 10 feet. The maximum height proposed again is 22. Section 21-1014-4F also states that structure supporting solar panels will not cover or obstruct any parking access aisles. Proposed array A will cover the north parking area access aisle. When we looked at the master plan, we talked about that before. The ordinance was written in 2011 and the maximum height was set at 10 feet. Again, that wasn't really looking at parking structures. Obviously, with a parking structure, even at a 10-foot height is very low. And I don't think the ordinance anticipated, I guess, the popularity of what these parking structures, how they would be so popular and how they would become. So in my mind, that was, it was written again in 2011 before solar really got hot in New Jersey, and didn't really foresee, and nor could it, the popularity of it and the requirement for that height actually to be increased significantly, especially due to the fact that we need it for emergency services and for clearance under the array for an ambulance, fire truck, what have you. So again, it's my professional opinion, the board has the authority to grant the variances under the C2 criteria. This time we're talking about three corporate place in Piscataway, Middlesex County, New Jersey. Again, the applicant is proposing to install green energy where it can fit it on site to offset its yearly electrical demand. We talked about the master plan. The master plan wants solar systems to be encouraged. Regarding the height variance, the supplied reports again say that they want the 13-foot-6 height for life safety. And as we provide the increased height for both safety and circulation, purpose A, general welfare would be advanced. Again, in my opinion, purpose M of the land use law will be advanced as it allows for efficient use of land. This permits installation of solar arrays in already developed paved portions of the site and preserve the berm and green space along the periphery along Corporate Drive. Again, let's go to the aerial. There's really nowhere we can put a standard ground mount or any more roof mounts. Again, the aerial is not accurate to date. And we have this large building to the south of us. There is, again, cooling equipment and other mechanicals atop that building as well. So we maxed out the rooftop with this smaller array at three corporate. Again, from a practical perspective, there's nowhere else to put it. And we do get the benefit of shading vehicles in the summer months. We find that once we put these carport arrays up, they become like the most popular sites to park in for employees and users of the facility, especially on a day like today. It would be a great thing to have shade structures for the vehicles. For the front yard setback, again, it's my opinion that purpose A, the land use law, would be advanced, as the reduction in the required setback allows for the installation of the carports and the use of solar to help offset the power demands of the site. Again, we are just scratching the surface with what we're doing with the solar here as far as what the demand is for this facility. Regarding the intent and purpose of the ordinance, I would argue the height limitation again was put in place without the thought of carports. And given the screening that exists, the intent of regulations, the height is met and the potential visual impact is reduced. For the front yard setbacks, my opinion that the setbacks again are put in place to regulate light, air, and open space, which is purpose C, and to provide adequate separation between uses. Given, again, it's a limited nature of the intrusion. And if you look at the aerial photo of where that array will be relative to the other uses on site, it will definitely not be a situation where it would stick out like a sore thumb, in my opinion, would fit in well with the established nature of this light industrial zone. Regarding, again, the negative criteria, we look to the effect that granting the variance will have on the surrounding properties and how it would affect the character of the neighborhood. And it's still my opinion that it would fit within the character of the neighborhood. The character is obviously light industrial, commercial in nature, and that will not change with the implementation of additional solar arrays on site. Just touching on the fact that they are open structures, not walled structures. So from a visual perspective, and if you've driven the site, those berms along Corporate Place are substantial. Yes, we'll be a little bit higher on the Corporate Place side, But again, in my view, being on the site, driving the site and looking in the general area, it will not stick out, and it will be in concert with the established character of that area. So it's therefore my opinion, the granting of the variances will not constitute a substantial detriment, and the positives outweigh the negatives. We have the same group of review letters from your board professionals, much similar comments. Again, I could probably just go on record to say that we will agree to comply. I think on your planner's letter, I think I touched on everything in direct testimony and discussion. We have similar memo from your board landscape architect that are similar to the previous application, and we can go on record that we will comply with revising the plans for some details for the landscaping, for providing the landscaping where we were going to be removing it. We'll replace it in kind and in the approximate area of where the removal will take place. We will change the details where appropriate, and we will agree to replace any dead or dying or missing trees, vegetation, what have you, from the original application. We also have the same approvals from your fire department and your DPW. We only got one letter from your engineer, but I'm assuming that will cover both. And again, those comments should be similar. And we agree that should the board act favorably in compliance, we will satisfy the concerns of your board professionals. And that would conclude my testimony.
Thank you. Board members, do you have any questions of this witness on this application?
Madam Chair, Dawn Corcoran. Mr. Rosati, I would just ask that the same condition as before with regard to those trees along your Centennial Avenue be included, there be a condition in this approval as well, you know, whether they have to be removed or relocated.
Okay, we will work with your township staff to make sure everyone's happy.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Ms. Buckley, would you ask? I'm opening the public portion. Would you see if there were any questions from anyone in the public?
You're on mute, Laura.
Just saw. It's okay. To get back over there.
You are.
I do not see anyone, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. Close to the public. Ms. Hall, do you have any other matters or?
Do not.
Do you have any other witnesses, I should say?
No, Mr. Rosati is our only witness tonight. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. What's your pleasure, board? Does anyone have a motion?
Madam Chair, this is Councilwoman Cahill. I would move that that the board accept this application, provided that the applicant again does work with the township in terms of the planting, the trees there that either may have to be set back or removed because of future sidewalks. And any of the other conditions that the applicant has agreed to in the reports.
Do I have a second?
Madam Chair, Reverend Kenny, I'll second it.
Ms. Buckley, would you call the roll, please?
Mayor Waller?
Yes.
Councilwoman Cahill?
Yes.
Ms. Corcoran?
Yes.
Ms. Saunders?
Yes.
There we are. Reverend Kenny?
Yes.
Mr. Espinoza?
Yes.
And Madam Chair?
Yes. Thank you. Ms. Hall, your application is approved.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for your time, and I'm glad the power didn't go out.
Yes. We were lucky. We were lucky tonight. Very good.
I was watching the radar. I keep seeing this red blob going towards your town. I'm like, uh-oh, but we made it. So thank you very much.
Now. Done. So moved on. Thank you. Have a good evening.
Thank you.
So long. You too.
Can I have a motion to pay the bills?
So moved.
Second?
Second. Second.
Roll call.
Carol.
Mayor Waller.
Yes.
Councilwoman Cahill.
Yes.
Ms. Corcoran.
Yes.
Saunders.
Yes.
Reverend Kenny.
Yes.
Mr. Espinoza.
Yes.
And Madam Chair.
Yes. Motion to adjourn.
So moved.
I second it. Thank you very much. Everyone.
See you on the first.
Stay cool. See you on
early this time, September 1st.
September 1st. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everyone. Good night, everyone. Enjoy the rest of your summer. Enjoy vacation, Steve.
Thank you. Record.